Looking forward to 2018 with the Planetary Society All-Stars this week on Planetary Radio. Welcome. I'm Matt Kaplan of the Planetary Society with more of the human adventure across our solar system and beyond. Happy New Year, all. The celebration continues with three of my terrific colleagues. I asked Senior Editor Emily Lakdawalla, Digital Editor Jason Davis, and Director of Space Policy Casey Dreyer to join me with their predictions of what to watch for in 2018. The podcast version of this week's show adds a long and fascinating review of 2017. It's at planetary.org/radio and elsewhere. Later, Bruce Betts will present his own 2018 highlights and a new space trivia contest, of course.
Well, the first big news is there's a whole lot of launches happening in 2018. There are three headed toward the moon at part of two missions. I already mentioned Chandrayaan 2, which is India's orbiter, lander, and rover, all launching in March. And then China is planning to launch Chang'e 4, which is the engineering copy of Chang'e 3, the highly successful lander and rover. What's different about Chang'e 4 is that they're going to be landing it on the lunar far side, which is a first. In order to make that happen, they have to launch a relay satellite first. The relay satellite will take up a position in a gravitational balance point on the far side of the moon from Earth, where it'll be able to see Earth and the far side of the surface of the moon at the same time, so that when Chang'e 4 lands and deploys its little rover, the relay satellite will be able to communicate with Earth and hopefully take some really cool pictures of... Actually, you know what? Maybe they don't have a camera now that I think about it. It's just a rather small relay satellite. I don't know. We'll see. The Chinese are famous for putting cameras all over their spacecraft. So, I mean, at least it's going to have a deployment camera or something. It should be able to take something. Let's see. Let's hope. So that's three separate launches to the moon. There's also going to be another launch to Mars, the long-awaited NASA InSight lander, which was delayed for 2 years because of a problem with its seismometer instrument, is going to be launching in May and landing on November 26th. So it's a launch and a landing in the same year. It's landing in a deliberately chosen to be the most boring possible site on Mars. It's a geophysical lander. So this mission is kind of like Juno, really, where the science is interesting. It's focused on the interior of the planet. Cameras are definitely not the point. It does have a camera, and the camera will show us an unbroken flat landscape if all goes well. I'm not really sure what to expect from it this year other than a dramatic landing and then the slow gathering of data from the InSight lander. There's going to be a launch of the BepiColombo mission to Mercury, which is a joint ESA and JAXA mission. It's actually two spacecraft, and like MESSENGER before it, it has a very long cruise with multiple flybys of Venus and Mercury before it finally settles into orbit. And then this isn't technically a planetary mission, but I'm just super excited about the Parker Solar Probe, which is going to launch this year and was going to actually fly right through the solar corona when it does science. It has Venus flybys. I don't really know that much about the spacecraft or what science it may be able to do, if anything, at Venus, but it'll sure be an event when it flies by Venus, and I'll be keeping on top of that.
And I can tell you one thing about it because we talked about it on the show. Because it has this huge solar shield to protect the spacecraft and its instruments from what else? The sun. They will actually be doing solar sailing. They'll be maneuvering, as have a few other spacecraft, by positioning that sail and using it to control their attitude, which I think is a pretty nice, another proof of concept for solar sailing, which we will be hearing in moments from Jason about LightSail 2.
The next big thing this year is going to be two different spacecraft approaching two different near-Earth asteroids to do two different sample return missions from those asteroids. One of them is NASA's OSIRIS-REx mission, which is approaching the asteroid Bennu. The other one is Hayabusa 2, which is approaching asteroid Ryugu. And they'll be approaching at roughly the same time, beginning sort of the early part of this year, March-ish, June-ish, they should start getting dot-like photos of their future targets. It's August and September that they'll really begin doing approaches. We'll get our first sights of these near-Earth objects. And every time we've ever seen near-Earth asteroids up close, every single one has been unique. So I really look forward to seeing how Bennu and Ryugu are quite different from each other in any place that we've ever visited before. To cap off the year, New Horizons will finally be approaching its Kuiper Belt target, 2014 MU69, which is a small object, probably about 30 kilometers across. It may well be a duck-shaped kind of binary object like the comet Churyumov-Gerasimenko was, or it could be a close binary, and recent evidence suggests it may have a moon. So it may actually be approaching multiple bodies at the end of this year. The flyby encounter happens right on the New Year's Eve holiday for us in the U.S. It's early in the morning of January 1st for Europe and Asia.
Ooh.
Yeah, I know. Spacecraft love destroying holidays.
Dang it.
You know, the InSight landing is happening the day after, the Monday after the Thanksgiving holiday here. So holidays are a pain if you're into space. But it will be cool. It will be exciting. It's actually a bigger problem for me that my husband's birthday is on January 1st. So that's going to ruin his birthday. But I'm looking forward to it. Meanwhile, there's like 20 other spacecraft active across the solar system. Lunar Reconnaissance Orbiter at the Moon, Akatsuki at Venus. As I said, 7 spacecraft at Mars. You have Juno at Jupiter. Voyagers off in deep space. It's really, really active out there. There's a lot of science going on.
Emily, do you go through a lot of this in your recent blog post, your annual WhatsApp blog post?
I absolutely do, and much more.
Can you tell us if there are any milestones in 2018 for the 2020 rover, the next rover that we look forward to setting out on Mars?
They're assembling the rover right now at JPL, so it'll be interesting to go check out the viewing gallery at JPL and see all of the different parts for the spacecraft, its cruise stage, its descent stage, start to come together.
Oh, let's do better than that. Let's see if they'll let us in bunny suits again like we did once before with the boss, Bill Nye. If you don't have anything else to add, Jason, we will go on to what you're looking forward to in 2018.
The big event, I should say the big events potentially, is that we might start seeing NASA astronauts flying from American soil again, which has not happened since the end of the shuttle program. Both SpaceX and Boeing have potential crewed flights coming up in 2018, their crewed demo flights. It's looking right now like SpaceX is the most likely company of the two to meet their deadline. They want to do a demo flight of their new spacecraft in April, followed up by a crewed flight later in the year that would visit the ISS. I think it's hard to overstate how big of a deal this will be, especially for a lot of the politicians that have, you know, a very sore spot about outsourcing our crewed activities to Russian spacecraft. So that's going to be a big deal to actually see astronauts down in Florida again after a 7-year gap.
Jason, are they going to launch NASA astronauts in that first test flight? Like, because I know certifying these for NASA astronaut safety is one of the kind of perennial issues that has been identified by the advisory council. Could SpaceX get around that by launching their own people and not having to meet those exact specifications in order to demonstrate a test flight?
Good question. I'm not sure about that, but I do know that the original plan was to have one NASA astronaut and one company-employed astronaut go on the demo flight. But that is an interesting question if they could get around some of those safety requirements by launching their own crew instead of a NASA astronaut. So moving on to other big events down in Florida, as we mentioned earlier, the Falcon Heavy demo flight, the first flight of SpaceX's mythical, it actually does exist. We've seen pictures of it, the Falcon Heavy rocket. This will be the biggest rocket that anyone has successfully flown, if it flies successfully, since the Saturn V. SpaceX has been promising this since 2013, and finally it's here. Over the holidays, they were rolling it out to the pad and standing it up vertically for some pad fit checks. So if all goes well, they will launch it in January, although, you know, I wouldn't be surprised if that slipped a little bit into February or something like that. Elon Musk has given extremely low expectations for this flight, pretty much all but saying there's a large chance it'll blow up. As we mentioned earlier, and I'd love to get the two of you to weigh in on this, what do we think of Elon Musk launching his SpaceX or his Tesla Roadster on this demo flight, providing it doesn't hit Mars or something like that? I'd love to hear what you guys think.
Every time I so much as make a statement of fact about whatever Elon Musk plans to launch on this rocket on Twitter, I just get hounded in my mentions by people who think I'm being overly critical. So I think I'm just going to keep quiet.
So go
on
ahead
this
and one. Be critical, Emily. Yeah, that, no, I'm just kidding.
See, I have a much smaller Twitter following than Emily, so I can critical about it.
I think it beats sending a wheel of cheese. Frankly, I think it's a wonderful romantic PR move.
Yeah, and someone pointed out, and I'd really be interested to know this, if Tesla was able to write off some of the flight cost as a marketing event. And I think I could see that being a possibility.
He said it was his personal car. Is that actually true?
That is correct.
Personal car. This is
okay. He can take that as a tax write-off. I talk about this a little bit in our Space Policy Edition podcast this month, and I'm mixed between it's super cool and weird and a perfect example of what it means to have a truly private space company that is run by the whims of one person. But also the flip side of that being is that this is a perfect anecdote for the future history of this current Gilded Age that we live in, where a billionaire launches his own luxury car on top of his own rocket into space because he has, you know, what else is he going to do? This weird undercurrent. And there's a book I read this year called The Long Space Age, which looks at the past history of American, particularly private space investment, going back to observatories in the 18th and 19th centuries. There's a point that the author makes about how you see a large explosion of, or a large increase in private funding of space exploration when you have periods of high economic inequality. You can really start to think about what it means to see companies like SpaceX, or particularly Blue Origin, which is purely at the largesse of a single powerful billionaire, and what it really says about the society that we're living in. I start to go down that rabbit hole as well. But fundamentally, I get a kick out of it. But there's also this darker side to it that I think we should all at least be aware of.
You have a great conversation with the author of that book, The Long Space Age, Alex McDonald. It's the December 1st edition of the Space Policy Edition of Planetary Radio.
Thanks for the plug.
I'll return with my Planetary Society colleagues, Casey Dreyer, Jason Davis, and Emily Lakdawalla in a minute. This is Planetary Radio.
Hi, this is Casey Dreyer, the Director of Space Policy here at the Planetary Society. And I wanted to let you know that right now, Congress is debating the future of NASA's budget. The House has proposed to increase NASA's budget and also increase planetary science in 2018. The Senate, however, has proposed to cut both. You can make your voice heard right now. We've made it easy to learn more if you go to planetary.org/petition2017. Thank you.
You can share your passion for space exploration by giving someone a gift membership to the Planetary Society this holiday season or any time of year. Your friend or loved one would join us as we nurture new and exciting science, advocate for space, and educate the world. The gift of space starts at planetary.org/give space. That's planetary.org/give space. Because, come on, it's space.
Welcome back to Planetary Radio. I'm Matt Kaplan, taking you back to the first ever four-way conversation with three of my Planetary Society colleagues. You've heard them many times before, and you probably read their work at planetary.org, or you should. Jason Davis is our digital editor, and embedded LightSail project reporter. Casey Dreyer is the director of space policy. We'll pick up the conversation with senior editor Emily Lakdawalla.
The American Girl doll company just unveiled that their doll of the year for 2018 is a girl named Luciana Vega, who is a Latina who wants to be an astronaut when she grows up. And it's been done in partnership with NASA. She has like a little NASA ISS spacesuit, EVA spacesuit and everything. It's really amazing. Somebody suggested that they should put a copy of Luciana in the driver's seat of Elon Musk's car when they launch it into space. And I kind of liked that one.
I love it. To continue for a moment more with the Falcon Heavy, by the time our listeners hear this program, Jason, it's quite possible that the Falcon Heavy will either have successfully or not successfully completed a static test firing.
Yeah, that'll be another big event, of course, leading up to the launch itself, is that they're going to stand the rocket up on the pad and fire all 27 engines at the same time. There's one aspect to this that hasn't been talked about. I've seen criticism of it in a few corners, but I think it's a legitimate point to make that while this is all SpaceX is doing, if the rocket fails or succeeds, it doesn't matter. It's their risk. That's not entirely accurate. Since it's launching from 39A, this is the same pad where crews are supposed to board the Crew Dragon capsule that'll be on top of the Falcon 9 eventually. You know, Elon Musk has hinted like, hey, there's a chance, you know, I hope it gets far enough away from the pad before it blows up so it doesn't damage the pad. Well, what if this thing were to blow up on the pad and cause significant damage to the infrastructure there? That could be a very real threat to NASA's commercial crew program. And you can bet that when that thing launches, or even when it's doing its static test fire, there's going to be some clenched teeth at NASA headquarters watching that and hoping that it all goes well.
Jason, let's go on to what is going to be, without any doubt, the most important, exciting, and significant mission of 2018.
Changing the world, yes, yes. LightSail 2. So tied into this whole Falcon Heavy demo news is that if it goes successfully, either the second or the third Falcon Heavy will have LightSail 2 aboard it as a secondary payload. We've kind of not talked about LightSail a lot because it's been largely ready to fly for several months and sitting in storage. But if all goes well, that mission will take place hopefully, mid-year, early to mid-year 2018, if depending on what SpaceX's schedule ends up being. So, yes, very exciting for all the people that supported this mission at the Planetary Society.
And where is LightSail 2 right now?
It is at Cal Poly, sitting in a storage cabinet in their clean room, all locked away neatly.
Can you call it like a space cabinet or something more exciting than a storage cabinet?
I have.
It's like vacuum sealed in a space Ultimate Futures space storage secure facility or something like that.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. Nah. Yeah. It's certainly not an IKEA cabinet or something like that. No, I have been in that clean room a couple times to watch LightSail tests. It does have glass windows on this cabinet, and you look in and you see all this flight hardware. And it's just one of those things that just being close to it kind of makes me nervous, because I'm like, I don't know how many millions of dollars are invested in this little cabinet here. But it's one of those deals.
Just watch your footing. Yeah. Casey, it's up to you to wrap us up. What are you looking forward to in the coming year?
Well, you always love to finish a show strong by talking about budgets. So I will talk about that. There are two big things that I think are going to be really important. So we talked about the Deep Space Gateway. We talked about all the activity of the National Space Council that's been going on. But where the really, you know, the rubber hits the road is where are they going to ask for money to do any of these things? And what are they going to ask for? Is it a realistic amount? Are they going to raid other programs in NASA to pay for it? We will see this, at least the hints of this, in the 2019 budget request, which comes out theoretically early February, and that will reflect some of these priorities we see. So what does it mean for NASA to lead humans back to the moon? Well, let's see what they put in the budget to allow them to do it, or maybe more accurately, not do it. So that'll give us a lot of insight into how serious this administration really is about pursuing some of these big efforts in space. The other thing I'm going to be looking forward to, which could really throw things off, is the 2018 midterm congressional elections that are going to be happening here in the U.S. in November. And there's a significant chance at this point that the Democratic Party could recapture one of the houses of Congress. And if that happens, everything grinds to a halt. I mean, if you think it's difficult now for legislation to get passed, this will be a very contentious government if it's divided like this. And there's a good possibility we could lose strong supporters of space if there's really a wave election in the Democratic favor. Democrats are supportive of space as well, but in a context of a highly partisan divided government like this, things like space just generally will fall by the wayside. And so you may have good space policy, you may have good intentions and a budget request, but it may all be consumed in political fighting for unrelated issues. So that'll be very consequential what happens in the midterm elections in terms of the future of NASA's space exploration. Not much we can really do about that, except work with the people who get elected. And that's one of the things that we'll be doing this year, is making friends with lots and lots of people in DC.
Emily, there is at least one book that will be appearing in 2018 that I know Jason, Casey, and I are looking forward to, and I bet you're looking forward to it most of all.
That I am. I'm very excited to finally see this thing in print. I'm finally publishing my first book on Curiosity called The Design and Engineering of Curiosity, out from Springer Praxis in, I think it's going to be early March. I'm just waiting for the page proofs now. I'll have one last chance to read the whole thing one more time, make sure there aren't any typos. Of course, you know I'm going to see some as soon as I see it in print. But yeah, it's available. I'm excited. I've had so much help from so many people on the mission to getting all the facts in this book as right as I possibly can. And the happiest piece of feedback I think I received was from project scientist Ashwin Vasavada, who said, if Curiosity had a glove compartment, this book would be in it.
Ah, that's great. Wow. Jason and Casey, do you have anything in your personal or professional lives that you're looking forward to in 2018?
I want to read Emily's book. That's it.
Thanks, Casey.
Yeah, I don't know if I can get a signed copy. I think
I can hook you guys up.
You know, a person.
I want a signed copy or two to give away on this radio show. Maybe more than one. One thing that I look forward to is talking to all of you many more times individually in 2018. But what do you say we do this again and that we don't wait a year to do it? I mean, this has just been really fun. And again, I'm sorry it took us so long to figure out that this would be a good idea. Would you be up for doing it again?
Yeah, I think I could. Jason's done.
No, I don't think so.
Trust Jason.
Yeah. 2018. I'm so down on 2018. I don't think I can. No, it's fun. I love talking to you guys. This is great.
It is an honor to have all of you as colleagues, and I do look forward to those conversations in what promises to be, as the Chinese say, an interesting year, hopefully a very good one for space exploration. Emily Lakdawalla, Senior Editor for the Planetary Society. Jason Davis, Digital Editor for the Planetary Society, and incidentally, our embedded reporter with the LightSail Project. And Casey Dreyer, our Director of Space Policy, running our advocacy and space policy team, representing all of us who want to see good things happen with space in Washington, D.C. Again, thank you. Thank you all.
Thank you, guys.
Thanks.
Thanks for having us.
We're going to go on now to a quick conversation looking back at 2017 and ahead with Bruce Betts as we also present our weekly What's Up.
Yeah, hey, why wasn't Bruce here? Anyway, he gets his own section, huh?
He's antisocial like that.
Yeah. It is time for What's Up with Bruce Betts. He is the Director of Science and Technology for the Planetary Society, who has things to tell us about the night sky, but apparently he does have a couple of things to cover that maybe weren't fully addressed by our earlier guests on today's show. Welcome back.
Thank you, and thank goodness I'm not with all those other social people.
Okay. Now everyone knows I'm sick. I got so sick the day after I recorded those folks. And so now I'm trying to put on a good face and be a pro with a 102.4 fever.
Oh.
That's showbiz. The show must go on.
I'm sorry to hear that, and we all hope you feel better very soon.
Okay, what are you looking forward to in 2018?
2018, we'll be announcing very shortly our new Shoemaker Neo grant winners, really advanced amateur astronomers who help do follow-up and characterization of near-Earth asteroids. And we, of course, we think, have the launch of LightSail 2 when the Falcon Heavy gets going down the road, and I'm guessing you talked about that. And then also in Planetary Society land, we'll be collaborating on a follow-up project with Honeybee Robotics. We did PlanetVac, which was a planetary vacuum to sample planetary surfaces. Well, now it's going to fly on a hover rocket, a mast and rocket called the Zodiac, and we'll have PlanetVac Zodiac. We'll get you more details on that later. And then the one other thing I wasn't sure you'd talked about, which is beyond this solar system's planet exploration, but that's the launch of the TESS spacecraft, the Transiting Exoplanet Survey Satellite, that will be looking for and discovering lots and lots of exoplanets, planets around other stars.
Excellent. Thank you. Then what's up in the night sky?
Night sky, it's the pre-dawn is where it's happening. We've got really bright Jupiter in the pre-dawn east, and to its upper right for a few more days is Mars, but they're going to do some close, moving around each other. And so particularly on the 6th and 7th, the mornings of the 6th and 7th, pre-dawn east, you'll see reddish Mars and much brighter Jupiter hanging out near each other. And down far to their lower left will be Mercury. And then the moon will join the party on the 11th and 12th. We move on to this week in space history. It was 2004. Spirit landed on Mars and started roving around.
We talked not that much about Spirit, but quite a bit about Opportunity. Just bare possibility that it might outlive Curiosity. I wouldn't put money on that, but wouldn't that be something?
It's amazing, amazing, amazing. It, of course, landed just 3 weeks or so later after Spirit, and Opportunity is still going.
And we had a party 14 years ago for all this.
Wild about Mars. All right, you ready?
I'm ready.
First of 2018, random space fact!
I think the ball just came down in Times Square.
I think it just hit me in the head. You're going to like this one, Matt. If you could drive around even the innermost ring of Saturn at 100 kilometers per hour, so 62 miles per hour, without stopping, so you're driving around the inner ring, it would take you about half an Earth year to get all the way around. If you drove around the F ring just outside the main rings, it would take about one Earth year.
Actually, I'm surprised it wouldn't be even longer.
There you go. You just have insights. Or delirium, one or the other.
Yeah, maybe in an hour I will be making that drive. Let's go on to the contest.
I asked you what two orbiters are part of the next Mercury mission, Bepi Colombo, which launches this year, 2018. How'd we do, Matt?
I think we have a first-time winner. Ross Pinkerton in New York, New York said, it's the Mercury Planetary Orbiter and the Mercury Magnetospheric Orbiter. Wow, sounds cool, he says, and then adds, keep up the good work. Is he correct?
He is indeed correct.
Ross, you are one lucky guy. You are going to receive that half-scale paper model of LightSail 2 and a 200-point iTelescope.net account on that worldwide network of telescopes, and you can donate that that account if you so choose, or use it yourself to poke around the night sky anywhere on Earth. But it's that half-scale paper model of LightSail 2 that really got a lot of people excited. Craig Balog. The mission is named after Professor Giuseppe Colombo, a mathematician and engineer who was the first to see that an unsuspected resonance is responsible for Mercury's habit of rotating on its axis three times for every two revolutions it makes around the sun, which is something you've talked about in the past.
It is indeed, and not what was expected.
I guess we're ready to go on.
Who chose the names of the Galilean moons of Jupiter? So who chose Io, Europa, Ganymede, and Callisto? Those names, go to planetary.org/radio contest.
All I know is that it wasn't Galileo, but so I'll give you that.
There you go, giving away stuff.
You have until Wednesday the 10th. That would be Wednesday, January 10th at 8 a.m. Pacific time. And we're going to go back to giving the winner this time around a lovely Planetary Society t-shirt and, of course, a 200-point iTelescope.net account. We're done.
All right. Everybody go out there, look up the night sky, and think about all the fun you're going to have in 2018. Thank you, and good night. Feel better, Matt.
Thank you. Just as soon as I get over this crud. That's Bruce Betts. He's the Director of Science and Technology for the Planetary Society. Looking forward to having a good time with him over the coming year. He joins us every week here for What's Up. Planetary Radio is produced by the Planetary Society in Pasadena, California, and is made possible by its hopeful members. Daniel Gunn is our associate producer. Josh Doyle composed our theme, which was arranged and performed by Peter Schlosser. I'm Matt Kaplan. Clear skies.